यशाप्तां मतदारहं नरेन्द्रम् सब्राह्मणो नात्मजमाप्यनन्दा अहो पदाम्बो महाराज ते कृताम् अल्पीयसि द्रोह उरुर्दमो धृता
The father heard from his son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best amongst all human beings. The rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary, began to repent, saying, "Alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He has awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The king is the best of all human beings. He is the representative of God, and he is never to be condemned for any of his actions. In other words, the king can do no wrong. The king may order hanging of a culprit son of a Brahmin, but he does not become sinful for killing a Brahmin. Even if there is something wrong with the king, he is never to be condemned. A medical practitioner may kill a patient by mistaken treatment, but such a killer is never condemned to death. So what to speak of a good and pious king like Maharaj Parikshit? In the Vedic way of life, the king is trained to become a Rajarshi, or a great saint, although he is ruling as king. It is the king only by whose good government the citizens can live peacefully and without any fear. The Rajarshis would manage their kingdom so nicely and so piously that their subjects would respect them as if they were the Lord. That is the instruction of the Vedas. The king is called Narendra, or the best amongst the human beings. How then could a king like Maharaj Parikshit be condemned by an inexperienced, puffed-up son of a Brahmin, even though he had attained the powers of a qualified Brahmin? Since Samikrishi was an experienced, good Brahmin, he did not approve of the actions of his condemned son. He began to lament for all that his son had done. The king was beyond the jurisdiction of curses as a general rule, and what to speak of a good king like Maharaj Parikshit? The offense of the king was most insignificant, and his being condemned to death was certainly a very great sin for Sringi. Therefore, Rishi Samik regretted the whole incident. Rishi was truly a qualified Brahmin, had vision of the future. There are two principles described in Veda, Shreyas and Prayas. One is to have great concern and thus act according to the immediate impulses of the mind and the senses. And the other is to utilize one's intelligence to monitor the actions and the words that come from us, with respect to to what the effect will be in the future. Animal civilization is a civilization where all the lower species are simply acting according to the dictations of the mind and senses, with no consideration of what the reaction may be. But when we come to this human form of existence, we are responsible for everything we say and everything we do. Not a moment passes when we are not accounted for. If we engage in spiritual activities, our every word, our every act is calculated, accounted, and recorded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the Paramatma. Neha vikramana sosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. And whatever is put into this spiritual account is never lost. It is eternally remembered by the Lord. This spiritual account, it is not something like there are secretaries writing down everything we do. In our businesses today, because we are fallible, products of Kali Yuga, we require computers. We require accountants. We require so many secretaries to keep notes and records. But Krishna says in Gita, Vedaham samatitani bharatamanani charjuna bhavishani chabhutani mam tu vedana kashtana. He remembers everything that has ever been done in the past by anyone and everyone in all material and spiritual worlds. And he knows everything that is happening in the present, everything being said, everything being, every activity and every thought of every living entity that exists. Krishna is taking note of it. And he also knows everything that will happen in the future. He says, I know all living beings, but because he is Vibhu, he is incomparably unlimited, and we are Anu, we are insignificant by our eternal nature as Jivatmas, we can never know Krishna in full. That is our condition. And that is Krishna's condition. Therefore, anything we do in devotional service, Krishna takes note of it from within our heart, and he'll never forget it. We see in the story of Ajamil, he was a nice devotee when he was a little boy. He served his guru with faith and devotion. And Krishna never forgot those things. But because he was Anu, insignificant, due to some misuse of independence, carelessness, he was overwhelmed by the flood of Maya's influences, and he became completely uncontrolled, and he utterly forgot all of his spiritual training and all of his spiritual attributes, and he became a rogue, a thief, the lowest of mankind, Duratma. But at the time, just before his death, Krishna, who knows past, present, and future, from within his heart, induced him to name his son Narayan, knowing he would be attached to this youngest son. And just when he was in the process of leaving his body, he called out the name of his son, Narayan. The Yamadutas came to punish him for all his sins, but the Vishnudutas came to save Ajamil, that he has chanted the name of Narayan. He did not do it because of his own intelligence, because Krishna remembered his previous spiritual activities. Krishna, in his heart, induced him to chant the name of Narayan at the time of death. And he was given the chance to go to Haridwar and perfect his life in Krishna consciousness. So in this way, Krishna is all-knowing. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead within everyone's heart. And for those who are in this material nature, who are not endeavoring in the path of surrender and devotion, everything is being recorded by the laws of karma. Everything. Every single sound vibration that comes out of your mouth will have a karmic reaction. Nothing is unattended. Don't think that Yamaraj doesn't hear. He's everywhere. He's empowered by the Paramatma. He's everywhere. Every single place your eye looks, it is accounted for. Well, not the whole world may not see, but it's being recorded in the record of karma. Everything your ear is listening to is being recorded. Everything you eat. You may go late at night when no devotees see you to one of these shops in Chopati. But you should know that it's all being recorded. Every bite. You cannot get away with anything. And there is a karmic reaction for absolutely every moment of everything you say and do. In previous ages, for everything you think, there's a karmic reaction. If you think something sinful, if you think of exploiting a person, if you think angry of a person, if you think of trying to enjoy a person, anything you think, it's as good as doing it. You get the same reaction. Can you imagine what would the world be in Kali Yuga if we were all accountable for what we think? But if you dwell on a certain thought, Krishna explains in Gita, while contemplating the objects of the senses, it develops attachment. And those attachments will impel us to speak and to act. So therefore, Krishna says, from the very beginning, when it comes in the seed form of a thought, we have to learn to control our mind. Otherwise, Krishna gives us some time gap to protect ourselves in Kali Yuga. In Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, Satya Yuga, as soon as a sinful thought comes, it's on your record. You can't escape it. But people were so pious. This was a good thing, because they were always having pious thoughts. So they were just accumulating so much good karma. But in Kali Yuga, Krishna knows, if you dwell on something, dwelling on that object of the senses or on that particular influence will ultimately bring you to speaking and acting according to that thought. But there's a little time reference, a little gap, by which you have your independent choice to try to somehow or other control your mind and fill it with good thoughts and restrain that, or to dwell on it and ultimately act in a way that will cause bondage. So it is very important that we learn to control our mind in Krishna consciousness. And how do we control our mind? Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. Whatever the mind wants to do, wherever it wants to go, it is its nature, it is conditioned for too many lives in the past. Engage it in Krishna's service. Somehow or other, desperately, we need devotional service. And when someone gives us devotional service, we should not think that that person is burdening us with some sort of work. Why me?
I'll do it if nobody else can do it.
Do we sometimes give this answer? Prabhu, can you clean the floor?
I will do it if nobody else can do it.
Prabhu, can you give a donation to help with the deities?
If nobody else gives anything, then maybe I'll do it.
So we're thinking that devotional service is a burden, it's a work. But actually, we have so many other activities and so many other desires in our lives. And the only thing that can actually control our minds and keep it above the laws of karma is devotional service. We should be grateful for devotional service. We should be desperate for devotional service. If someone's giving us devotional service, they're giving us the means by which we can purify our heart. They're giving us the only means to withstand and transcend the karmic influences of Maya within our mind and within our life. There's no other way except engaging in Krishna's service, which begins by hearing his glories and chanting his holy name. As Srila Prabhupada would say, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. If we think about this statement, the devil's workshop, of course this is a Western grammatical statement. Devil means the cruel influence of Maya that is out to corrupt our lives. And workshop is where Maya creates havoc. If your mind is idle, Maya will create havoc in that mind. Inevitably. Therefore, we must always keep our minds filled with thoughts of Krishna, his name, and thoughts of activities that are being offered to him in devotion. That is very important. So everything we say and do in spiritual life is being recorded, and it is eternally on our benefit. And everything we do in material life for our sense gratification is being recorded by the laws of karma. You cannot get away with anything without a reaction. And the laws of karma are so fine. They scrutinizingly analyze you and calculate everything you are doing and saying to the minutest detail. Every adjective, every verb, every noun, and what your intention is, it is all being recorded, and there will be a reaction. Every blinking of your eye, where you're blinking, why you're blinking, it's all being recorded. Because this is Krishna. The previous Soviet government, they had their KGB. They had spies in every house, in every family, practically every neighborhood, just calculating what the mother's doing, what the father's. But they're just useless, fallible people, KGB. But the laws of karma, everything is recorded. They are perverted reflections. And everything is being reported to the central government of Yamaraj. And at every moment you're getting reactions. And how you respond to those reactions will determine your future. So one who understands this is called intelligent. One who grasps the responsibility we have in our life is called a human being. And therefore, every word and every action is selected according to what will bring about the best future. Nayam deho deha bajam de loke, kastan kaman arhadi vibhujam jay, tapo divyam putra kayuna satvam suje jisyam brahma sokyam thunantam. Now that you have achieved this rare human form of life, do not waste it trying to enjoy sense gratification. Because these things are available to dogs and hogs. They have their sense gratification. Tapo divyam putrika yena sattvam. Human life is meant for tapasya. It is meant for austerity. Because this will bring about the awakening of real joy and happiness. And what is tapasya? We have a misconception. We think that tapasya is to go into the jungles and sit naked in the Padmasan without eating, trying to control your breath. That is not real tapasya. Because many of those people, they may be controlling their breath and they may not be eating and they may not have any clothes on. But there are monkeys also doing similar things in the same jungle. Sometimes they don't get food, they don't eat. And they also do not wear clothes. And they also control their breath very nicely. We have seen. Tapasya means to act according to the responsible occupation that we may have in life, but never to perform any activity that is unfavorable for our future spiritual development. To accept what is favorable for devotional service and to reject what is unfavorable for devotional service, that is the perfection of tapasya, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. Krishna taught Arjuna the perfection of tapasya. And he taught him action, dynamic action. But everything he did, because he did it in reference to what Krishna wanted, it was perfect. So we must be very careful not to spoil our spiritual lives. A tree, for those of you who have lived in the forest or in the country, you know what it takes to grow a tree. First you plant the seed, then you protect it and water it. Some trees, before they begin to give fruit, take 10 years, 15 years. Some trees, to develop what they have come to, have been growing, painstakingly growing, little by little by little, for hundreds of years. That's how long it takes to grow a tree and bring it to its mature state. Let me ask you, how long does it take to cut down that tree? It is a matter of seconds. In the old times, when you just had an axe, it may take you about 5 minutes to cut down the tree. But modern civilization, they have chainsaws, you can do it in 5 seconds. That is modern civilization. Prabhupada said they have simply, in their name of technology and science, they have accelerated the process of destruction. Atomic bombs, nuclear bombs. They're not giving life, they're accelerating mass destruction. So we should understand that we can be years and years and years of cultivating our Krishna consciousness. And if we make foolish offenses, it is all covered. You cannot destroy devotional service, but it is completely covered and you lose perception of everything you've done. In other words, the cloud of illusion covers, and it may cover all your spiritual progress for many births. In one sense, it is like that.
years and years and years of carefully fertilizing, cultivating the tree of bhakti. And then if we misbehave toward other Vaishnavas, aparads, it's like taking a chainsaw. It's all covered. It's lost. You may not be able to find it for many lifetimes. So we have to be very careful. Not only offenses to Vaishnavas, but also performing activities that are against the principles of Krishna consciousness, sinful activities. So an intelligent person is always looking into the future. Whatever we do and whatever we say, we should train ourselves to calculate, is this going to bring about a good result or a negative result? Is this going to help my Guru Maharaj's and Lord Chaitanya's mission, or is this going to create an impediment in the progress of this mission? This is human life. This is tapasya. We accept what's favorable. We may not want to rise and chant our rounds. We may have no inclination, but we do it because it is right. That is tapasya. We may have no inclination at all to perform our puja, or to come to the temple, or to do our seva, whatever it may be. But we know it's right, so we do it. We put aside our mind's conceptions. Because the nature of the mind is accepting and rejecting, hankering and lamenting, sankalpa, vikalpa. The mind is unsteady, chanchalam. It's very fickle. So we cannot put our trust in our mind. We have to just understand, what is it that Guru and Krishna and the great Vaishnavas want of me? And I will accept what they want from me, whatever. That is tapasya. And what is not to be done, I will not do, even if my senses are just bombarding me with desires, even if my mind is going mad with greed or lust or anger or pride, if it is not good for my spiritual life, with the higher self I will conquer the lower self. With my human intelligence I will beat down these animal instincts and engage that same mind and senses in purifying activities. Yama niyama. Doing what's good and rejecting what is bad for our spiritual progress. That is tapasya. That is human life. But the animals, simply instinctive. They live for the moment. And this is the difference between Sringi and Samik Rishi. Sringi was an inexperienced boy, because in those days, before Kali Yuga took its heavy toll, if you were born in a Brahmin family, just the environment, you had tremendous Brahminical powers. And Brahmin's powers were very great. Greater than the king's. You know the story of Vishwamitra Muni and Vasishtha Muni. This is a wonderful narration in Valmiki's Ramayana. Vishwamitra Muni was the king of the earth. He was the regal emperor. All other kings were subjugated by his powers. He was a Maharati, fantastic warrior. He could defeat armies single-handedly. And he was righteous. And he came to Vasishtha Muni's ashram. And Vasishtha Muni wanted to take care of him, but Vishwamitra Muni had his armies with him. He had lakhs and lakhs of soldiers and ministers and associates. So Vasishtha Muni was just very kind and loving, gentle Brahmin. He was thinking, I should welcome them with nice hospitality. I should give them some prasad. So he had a kamadhenu cow. Kamadhenu cows are cows that Brahmins have in those days, and they can give whatever you want. So Vasishtha Muni, out of love and respect and humble service to Vishwamitra, he asked his cow to make a nice feast. So all of a sudden, out from the cow's udder came puris and samosas and everything. Big, big, sumptuous feast. All on beautiful golden plates. Everything just came out of the cow. Nice residential quarters for them to stay. So when you have too much power, you think that everything should be yours. That is the nature. When you're just a simple, humble person, you're very willing to accept that somebody else is better than you. But the bigger you get, the more intolerable it is that anybody could be better than you. Because you can become infatuated. This is the condition. It's intolerable. That the worker in the shop, he doesn't mind if somebody's better. But there's always competition amongst the executives. Sometimes they're even... Everybody knows what they do. And when you become very, very big, like these politicians, just see in the campaigns, in India and the West, all they do is blaspheme each other. They just blaspheme. They just do nothing but find faults with each other and try to ruin the other person's name so that they are in the unparalleled highest position. So the bigger you get, the more inclination we have that we cannot tolerate anyone being equal to or better than us. In other words, we're competing with God. Such a joke. Little insects crawling around this little earth planet thinking they're so great. So, in this way, there is a great rivalry and competition in this age of Kali Yuga. It is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. But even in other yugas, we find that when you have a lot, you think you deserve anything you want. That's also a tendency of Maya, isn't it not? When you have buying power and you have so many things, you have a nice tape recorder and you have a nice car and you have a nice home, and you see somebody who has something better, you immediately think, that should be mine. How could he have a better one than me? This is not bona fide. So Vishwamitra Muni was a king. He had such power, such greatness, and he saw that Vasishtha Muni had this cow that could do anything. And Vishwamitra Muni, after eating the feast and accepting all the hospitality of Vasishtha, he said, I'm the king. I'm the representative of God. Therefore, everything belongs to me. Give me this cow. Vasishtha Muni said, you already have palaces everywhere. You already have millions of soldiers. You already have millions of assistants. You have unlimited amounts of wealth. What do you need this cow for? You have everything. He said, no, I will not be satisfied unless I have this cow, because I don't have a cow like this. Vasishtha Muni said, but this cow is giving me ghee to perform yajna for the benefit of all humanity, and I need this cow for my brahminical services. And Vishwamitra Muni says, either you give it to me or I will take her. Vasishtha Muni said, no, I will not give. So Vishwamitra Muni forcibly picked up the cow and took it away. And the cow was screaming and crying to Vasishtha, don't let him take me away, don't let him take me away. And somehow or other the cow escaped and came back to Vasishtha, and Vishwamitra and his soldiers were all coming to get the cow. Vasishtha Muni said, what should I do? The cow said, please protect me. So Vasishtha Muni said, all right, I will help you protect yourself. And then out from the cow's udder came millions of soldiers. And they attacked Vishwamitra Muni's soldiers. And they actually defeated Vishwamitra Muni's soldiers. Then they went to attack Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra destroyed all of them. Then he started coming toward the cow. So then the cow, Vishwamitra Muni, milked her, and out came millions of even more powerful soldiers. Millions and millions and millions. And they all were like demigods. And they attacked. And after this went on for some time, Vishwamitra Muni was completely defeated. He was finished. He could have just gone back to his kingdom and be content to not have the cow, but his pride was crushed. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So he was thinking that, what is the use of being a Kshatriya if I'm defeated by Brahmins? I want to become a Brahmin. Then I'll have greater power. So he asked how he could become a Brahmin. And of course we know, in those days, to be a Brahmin took tremendous amount of qualification. Even in those days, to be born a Brahmin, you had to do tremendous amount of qualifications, of past karma. Today, kalo shudra sambhave, everyone's a sutra. Doesn't really matter that much where you're born. It's just a matter of what you cultivate. But if you are born, if you have good karma, you will be born in a place where there is brahminical or devotional qualifications. Not necessarily brahminical, but devotional qualifications. If you are fortunate. So Vishwamitra Muni began to perform tremendous amounts of tapasya just to become a Brahmin. And he just went to Himalayas and started doing this dhyan and pranayama and asana and all these various, and he became so powerful that even the demigods were fearful. They were thinking, with the powers he has, he could conquer us. And Indra was thinking, he will take my position. This is another nature of having too much. If you have too much prestige, too much pride, too much opulence, you think everyone wants what I have. And then you become suspicious and fearful. What is his motive? This is also explained, Narada Muni, Manigriva, and Nalakuvera. It's explained by Srila Prabhupada in this story. When great sages like Narada, when they come to a simple person's home, the person just worships them and say, thank you, Swamiji, for coming. Please tell me, what is the goal of life? But when such a person comes to someone who is too much opulence, then the person is thinking, why has he come? What is his motive? What does he want from me? He's saying this, but what does he mean? What's behind it all? When is he going to ask that question? He's just building up with all sweet words and philosophy and Krishna Katha, but ultimately he wants a donation from me. He'll give a whole Bhagavat Saptaha in my house for 7 days, 10 hours a day, but it's all just to get a donation from me. So we're suspicious of everyone. And there's no peace when you're always fearful. So Indra is like that, sometimes. He's a great soul. We offer obeisances at his lotus feet. But still, according to the Shastra, Krishna teaches us many lessons through his devotional service. So, he's thinking, if he has so much power, why is he doing all this tapasya? Obviously, because he wants my wife Sachi, and he wants my beautiful golden throne, and he wants my Nandana gardens, and he wants my beautiful palace, he wants my thunderbolt, he wants my position. Otherwise, why would anyone be doing like this? Everyone wants my position. Because I'm Indra. Vishwamitra Muni had nothing for Indra.
But still, he sent
Menaka. Menaka was Apsara, very beautiful features of every variety. And just by the tinkling of her ankle bells and her bangles, Vishwamitra Muni came out of his tapasya and he got married to her. And then Indra was thinking, ha ha, now he's just in bondage, no problem. But then Vishwamitra Muni understood that I have made a big mistake, and he rejected that situation, and then he began to perform tapasya again. And he, with even more determination, with a vow that no Mataji is going to disturb me again. And then he sent another, Indra sent another lady. But this time, Vishwamitra, just when he saw her, when he heard the ankle bells and the bangles, and he just glanced at her with yogic powers that made her turn into a piece of rock. And then he realized that first I fell victim to lust, and now I'm falling victim to anger. Both ways I have deviated and lost my position. Anyways, then he went back and started doing more and more and more and more and more tapasya until he was so powerful that he was actually approached. What do you want? He said, I want to be a Brahmin. So they said, if you want to be a Brahmin, there's only one way. You have to get the blessings of Vishishta Muni. So he went to Vishishta Muni. By this time he was very humble. He was actually very brahminical. And he went to Vishishta Muni, and Vishishta Muni forgave him of everything of the past, and he gave him the status and the powers of a Brahmin. So Sringi, he had brahminical powers, but he did not know how to utilize them with the intelligence of a real Brahmin, to think in terms of what will the future bring by my action. He acted instinctively. He saw that his father was insulted, and it was an insignificant insult. He did not consider, who is this Maharaj Parikshit? What he has done for the world, what he's doing for the world. He didn't consider the reality that the entire brahminical culture was only existed because he was protecting them. It is said you should not bite the hand that feeds you. If the Brahmins do not protect, if the Kshatriyas do not protect brahminical culture cannot survive. And if Brahmins are not giving guidance to the kings cannot perform their duty as representatives of God. So the Varnashram system, everyone is interrelated intimately and lovingly with each other, all the Varnas and Ashrams. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of Krishna from his very existence in the womb of his mother. He was Krishna conscious. When he was a child, he didn't play cricket like all the other children in India. He didn't play games. He was worshipping deities of Krishna and making offerings to them. What kind of child was this? And when he grew up, he was the upholder of the highest spiritual integrity and moral justice. Kali himself could not enter into the kingdom because of his strong rule. Sringi did not consider these things. He's the representative of God on earth. He's Raja Rishi. He's not just Raja, but he's a Rajarishi. He's a saintly king. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport that one who is a Rajarishi, a saintly king, he is above condemnation. even if he makes mistakes, he still must be respected because of his position and relationship to God. How you treat the king in such a spiritual monarchy is how you respect God.
No, he didn't consider this.
He didn't consider the future, that if I curse this king to die, who's going to take his place? Who's going to rule the world? Who's going to protect the innocent? Who's going to keep abilities? He simply acted according to his immediate instincts of the mind and senses, prayas, animal. He was angry and he spoke. I curse this king to die in 7 days by being bitten by a snake bird, Taraksha.
But Samyak Rishi,
as soon as he heard the news, he was appalled. He was aggrieved because he could see the instantly, as soon as he heard from Sringi what he had done, he could instantly see the future effects of what was going to take place.
And in the next verses that you will be reading in the next few days, you will see
how the whole civilization is about to collapse because of what you have done.
So we are always 24 hours a day having the choice whether we will be Samyak Rishi or Sringi, whether we will just act and speak according to the moment. Someone does something that somehow you're in a bad mood and they make you angry and you just like a snake. You just raise your hoods and venom just starts coming out of your mouth in the form of harsh words. Or sometimes you beat someone. Or sometimes you beat yourself. In this way, what we do, due to anger, anger is a very, very powerful weapon of Maya that comes from within us. We must kamakro trivadam narakashedam dwaram nashadam atmana kamakrodas tatalobas tatam edatriyam jaje. Krishna says there are 3 gates that lead to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And every sane man must control these urges. Otherwise they will degrade the soul. According to Krishna, this is the definition of sanity. Sanity doesn't mean that you wear a white shirt and tie and a nice 3-piece suit and drive in a nice car and have telephone conversations with people abroad. That is not sanity. Sanity means when anger comes, you control it, you subdue it, you do not act according. And lust, material desires. Prabhupada gave so many examples. You see something nice to eat, and your tongue says, eat it, eat it, eat it, you must have it, you must have it. But it's not the right food, it's not offerable to Krishna. But your tongue is saying, taste, taste. And your tongue is just going mad. It's like a serpent in your mouth, just... So you run to tantalize the tongue by putting some substance on its surface. And then the eyes. Look, look, you must go there and see it. This is the nature of the monk. This is how lust works. And the ears want to hear. Bhajans are very nice.
And kirtan is very nice, but we have to have a balance in our life. Otherwise, you will become fanatic. And Prabhupada said that religion without philosophy is fanaticism. So we don't want to be fanatics. So we have to balance our life nicely. So yes, I did 1 hour and 45 minutes of japa, where I was hearing the holy name. And I went, Mangal Arati was 25 minutes. And Guru Puja was 15 minutes. And I heard Srimad Bhagavatam class for an hour. So I already have 3 hours of Harikatha in my ears. So to keep from being fanatic, I should listen to at least 15 minutes of gazelles and cinema songs. Because then I'll know what's happening. I'll have a good realization of how the karmis think. It's for my preaching. In this way, the tendency to hear something just makes, enthralls and captivates and pollutes your intelligence. And the desire to touch. In this way, all of the senses, they are just so prone. And the way the modes of material nature are, tamaguna, sattvaguna, rajaguna, they're always shifting, they're always combining, they're never stable and steady. In this age of Kali Yuga, the modes of nature are just battling against one another. In 1 minute, sattvaguna comes into your mind and you're, oh, so nice being a devotee. How could anyone want to enjoy sense gratification? When we have Srila Prabhupada's books, how possibly could anyone want to enjoy sense gratification? Let me just sit and study and read these beautiful pastimes. Sometimes we're like that because sattvaguna is prominent. And then at other times, you're trying to read and you're thinking, how can I read? This is not possible. When rajaguna comes, all of a sudden your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, your flesh, your belly, your genitals, everything just starts going wild with desire because rajaguna has come. And then at other times, tamaguna comes. Tamaguna. Different ways tamaguna comes. One is, sometimes you're sitting in class and you're thinking, this is such an interesting class when sattvaguna is there. When rajaguna is there, you're thinking, looking at the watch, trying to give the speaker the hint that you should end. Because I'm looking at my watch. This is my announcement. And you're thinking, I have an appointment, I have a meeting, I have to go to work. I have so many rupees that I could earn if I get out of this temple, and why doesn't he end class? Anyways, they'll all understand. I'm an important person in the world, so you just run away. That's when rajaguna strikes. And when tamaguna strikes, you think that actually, I'm not sleeping. You're laying there, your head is down, your eyes are closed. There are snoring sound vibrations coming out of the gates of your body. And one of your beloved, compassionate, caring God brothers or God sisters says, Prabhu, please wake up. I'm not sleeping. Even sometimes the speaker says, stand up. And you look at him like, I'm not sleeping. How dare you think that I would fall asleep in Srimad Bhagavatam class? You're so much in Tamaguna, you don't even know you're in Tamaguna.
And also, Tamaguna sometimes causes us to be very angry and violent. Violent with our words, violent with our actions, violent in our mind. Of course, devotees, they have some, just by the way of our culture, there's some restraint. Other people, when Tamaguna attacks, they just want to just drink alcohol, smoke cigarettes, take drugs, just to victimized by the Tamaguna. So these three modes of material nature are always shifting and putting us in different moods and different states of consciousness. Sometimes you just love to see your god brothers and god sisters. Sometimes your god brother or god sister comes and you're just, oh, I'm so happy to see you. You're so merciful, and you embrace them. And other times it's like, why are you bothering me? Get out of my sight. You may not say it, but you think it. You feel it. Why? Is it a different you? You may think you're in different moods, but why are you in different moods? Because different modes of material nature are coming and influencing you at different times. What Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, we must rise above these modes of material nature. And how do we rise above these modes of material nature? Prakrite kriyamana nigunai kanamani sarabhasa ahankara vimudhata karta. We think we're the doer, but actually everything is just being created by different moods and influences by the modes of material nature. There is a book, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, about a doctor who was a very pious, nice man, and he would drink something and he would become a demon. And pretty soon, he didn't have to drink it anymore. Sometimes he would just get this mood of a demon, and sometimes he would get the mood of a very gentle, nice, philanthropic person. But the author of the book was trying to show, actually, what is human behavior? We all have these tendencies. One day we just want to just look at the deity and chant Hare Krishna and just touch the feet of all the Vaishnavas. And the other day we just want to run to the cinema and beat up our god brothers. This is blasphemy. Eat, eat, eat. So many ways the modes of material nature just are always shifting within us. One day we just have the spirit that I'll renounce everything. And then the next day we think, no, I have to oblige myself to all of the responsibilities of my material attachments. So why these? Are we different persons? We have to analyze and understand how the three modes of material nature are influencing us and acting on us in a different way at different times. And to rise above the modes of material nature simply means to be steady. The modes of material nature create, at times, lust, anger, and greed. And sanity means to control them, to not act upon them, to look into the future, to see the responsibility of what the effects will be, whatever I do or say or think. And that is intelligence. And how to do? The tapasya of simply living according to the directions of Krishna, Guru, and Sadhu. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra says, don't be angry. Don't offend others. Don't criticize. The tendency is there. No, I will not do it. And you have that power. Krishna will give you that power if you try.
your mind and senses, your eyes and your ears and your tongue and your nose and your flesh is longing for something, and you say, no, this is not what Guru Maharaj wants me to do. This body is his property. This body is not my own. I must use it accordingly. This is austerity. And this will bring about the mercy of Krishna. Raga dvesha vimuktaishtu vishayanandriyaishtaran atma vishaya vidheyatma prasadam adigacchati. If we follow the regulative principles of freedom by just following the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, doing what is good for our spiritual life and restraining from doing what is not. But you cannot separate the two. If you're not constantly trying to do what's good for your spiritual life, the idle mind will force you to do what's not. So when the modes of passion and ignorance come into our life, we have to take shelter of Krishna by taking shelter of our service. And this is responsible life. This is the example of Samik Rishi. Don't give in to the example of Sringi. We see what he has done to the world. And in our own small way, we are also doing the same thing to the world every time we give in to the immediate demands of our mind and senses. We must always use our intelligence to do what Krishna wants, to do what Guru and the Vaishnavas are asking us. That is Krishna consciousness. Trinarapi sunichena, tarorapi sahishmina. Amani namanadena kirataniya sadhari. We must keep this verse always as the guiding light at every moment in our life of what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. Is my activity according to the principles of this sloka? Or is it contrary? If it is contrary, we must reject it. If it is in pursuance of being humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, offering all respect to others and expecting none in return, anything we say or do, if it is contrary to that verse, we should not do it. This should be our barometer. And with the help of the spiritual master and the scriptures and the great sadhus, we learn how to apply this verse 24 hours a day in our life. We should evaluate everything accordingly. And then we can make wonderful spiritual progress. And we can give the great gift of Krishna conscious example to others. And we can help purify the world. And Krishna will empower us to spread the glories of his holy names. Is there any questions? I don't see anyone looking at their watch at this time. Even all the watch lookers are somehow restraining from picking up their arms. Yes.
Is it true that doing karma is totally in control of the human being? Is it true that doing karma is totally in the control of the human being itself, himself?
Yes.
Or is subject to Lord Krishna?
Krishna has created the laws of karma. And if we surrender to Krishna, if we act under the guidance of Krishna's representative, then we are above and beyond karma. But if anything we do that is not under the direction of Krishna or his representatives in his service is within the laws of karma. And every human being is producing karma with everything we do that is not in devotion to Krishna. And the animal species and the lower species, they are not producing karma. They are just living out what they have already produced in previous human lives. God has created this system. Ultimately, it is his great mercy.
because it's all meant to bring us back to our original natural position.
Maharaj, when the attack of Maya comes and you get completely engrossed and you get completely subdued with it, and we say that the only way for us is completely engage ourselves in devotional service, and that's the only way we can completely get away from Maya's attack. Now, there are 9 processes of devotional services. Which is the when the biggest attack comes and you feel it that you are completely overwhelmed, there is no way, you will be completely off if you are not completely sincere and you are completely on track, on the guard. Out of that 9 devotional service which has been there, which is the devotional service which is the most effective by which we can completely subdue that attack?
Thank you very much.